Voice of Barbados, 92.9 FM, and it's Sunday evening, and the time has come for us to welcome once again the good doctor, Dr. Renee Boyce. She is your presenter for the Better Health Radio Show. We gave her a short vacation last week. Now she's back here to shed some great knowledge for us. Good evening, Doc.
Hi, good evening, Gregston. How are you?
Yes, I'm good, thanks. What about yourself?
I'm doing pretty okay, making sure that you can hear me loudly and clearly. My laptop took a drop.
It took a drop or you dropped it? Which one?
It took a drop.
Okay, all right. Let's go with that.
Yeah, so you're hearing me loudly and clearly?
Yes, I can hear you. Go ahead, please.
Wonderful. So good evening to you and to everybody. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show. After a brief hiatus, I am back with you. Another exciting show planned, full of knowledge, full of fun. And if you want to call into our show this evening, where we help you to live your best life, you can give Gregston a call in the studio, 434-1790. And if you want to send a WhatsApp, if your thoughts are a little longer, or if you're a bit shy, like me, you can, not a word, 266-48, I'm not even giving you the opportunity, 266-4862. So those numbers, without interruption again, 434-1790 and 266-4862 for the WhatsApp. I'm very excited, as usual on Sunday evenings, to invite or to introduce to you my guest. And one of the things I can say about my colleagues is that when I ask them, there is no promise of money, fame, fortune. I simply say we are educating the public. And 99% of the time that I've asked, they've willingly come on board. So I just want to say thank you to all the guests and those repeat guests as well that we've had here on the Better Health Radio Show over the past, I believe it's 4 years, Gregston.
That is correct. Years? Oh, I can speak now?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, it is indeed four. Four and going strong, and you're doing very well. People are very happy with you.
Yes, so and the show wouldn't be what it is. I mean, with the callers, yes, they really do make the show. Some characters we've come to get accustomed to over the years, but the guests, I really want to say, of course, you too, Gregston, you know, you do help a little bit.
That's quite all right. Guests. That's quite okay. They come to hear you, and I'm happy with that.
Yes, our guests. So this evening, without much further ado, my guest is Dr. Diane Brathwaite. Hi, Diane. How are you?
Hi, good evening. How are you doing? And congratulations on 4 years of helping to educate the public. That's a wonderful milestone, but also a wonderful initiative. So keep it going.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. Dr. Diane Brathwaite is a proud graduate of the University of the West Indies, and she has furthered her education in the United Kingdom, where she has specialized in endocrinology, particularly in the management of diabetes and everything surrounding diabetes. So this evening, we want to focus on diabetes, all things diabetes, diabetes of the past and diabetes of the future. So Dr. Brathwaite, as I had mentioned, is trained in the United Kingdom. And one of the tidbits about her is that she's also a professionally trained dancer. And like most dancers, she walks like a dancer. You can tell those people who are trained dancers, they have a particular, a very light walk, if I could describe it. They almost walk on their toes then, if you think about it. And she is ready and raring to give us all the information that she can in this brief 54 minutes about diabetes. So we're going to start at the beginning, Dr. Brathwaite. Tell us a little bit about the diabetes, the Maria Holder Center here in Barbados. What's the mission of the Maria Holder Center? Where is it located as well?
Yeah, so the Maria Holder, our diabetes center for the Caribbean, is located in Warren, St. Michael, right next door to the Eunice Gibson Polyclinic. It actually opened its doors in 2014, and the idea of the actual center was to be able to deliver what we call multidisciplinary care to persons living with diabetes in Barbados. So when we say multidisciplinary care, it means being able to deliver various specialities for persons living with diabetes. So as we go on to talk, we'll understand that a person with diabetes actually has to look at several different organ systems and several different things if they want to become successful managers of their diabetes in the long term.
And we'll talk a little bit about being able to access care at the Diabetes Center over there in Warrens as we go on, but we really want to get into the meat of the matter. The first thing we're going to start with, and the question might be in the minds of some of our listeners, especially those who listen to the program regularly, why are we discussing diabetes again? But over the years, what we found, despite the number of shows we have, despite the number of health education forms in different settings, the prevalence of diabetes still remains high. And we're taking another opportunity this evening to share with the public the basics of diabetes and beyond. So, what is diabetes? What's the definition of diabetes?
So first of all, before I go on, I'm going to keep everything really, really simple this evening.
Correct.
Very, very basic, right? Because I want people to understand. So therefore, diabetes is a condition whereby you have an elevation of your blood glucose. Some people know it as blood sugar. And this happens because you have a dysfunction or a deficit or a lack of something called insulin. So insulin is a hormone that allows the body to utilize the sugars, basically, or dispose of the sugars, so it doesn't stay in the blood system. So if you're not producing insulin, it means that your blood sugars will become raised, or if you're producing insulin but your insulin does not work properly, your blood sugars still kind of become raised. Okay, so in essence, it is what we call an absolute or total lack of or a relative lack of insulin in the body to help metabolize the sugars that exist in the body, basically.
I think one of the problems we as physicians have would be persons' perceptions of diabetes, where people culturally tend to say, oh, I have a touch of diabetes. And I think that perception lends to persons not treating diabetes as seriously as it needs to be treated, and it doesn't allow persons to manage the diabetes as well as it could be managed. So my next question to you, we've understood then that my next question is that we understand then that it's too much sugar in the bloodstream at its basic level.
Correct.
What type of diabetes?
Pardon me?
Are there different types of diabetes?
Yes, so I actually classified through explaining what it was, the basic two types. So when you have a complete lack of insulin, you have type 1 diabetes, and that is more commonly found in childhood, but it can occur really at any age as well. And then, of course, you have the much more common one occurring in the majority of people, over 97% of people in Barbados. That's going to be type 2 diabetes. And that's when you have insulin floating around in the body, but it's not doing what it should do. So it's almost like a key that's supposed to open a door, and I call the door the sugar channels when I explain it to patients. And it's like the key doesn't open the door for the sugar channels. So the sugar channels, like in the muscle, stay locked, and the sugar, instead of moving from the bloodstream into the muscle where it can get burnt up for energy, just sits down in the bloodstream. So that's type 2 diabetes. And in that case, remember the insulin doesn't work, and we say that you're insulin resistant. There are other types of diabetes as well, but those I think are the common ones that people need to focus on. But just also to be aware that you can get diabetes in pregnancy. That's something called gestational diabetes, and that normally happens later on in the pregnancy, like so in the third trimester or the latter third of the pregnancy. So the female hormones make the insulin not work properly at high levels, and people who are, you know, maybe at risk of getting diabetes and become diabetic in pregnancy. So another important kind of category to remember is the gestational type. But that's keeping it simple. There are types of diabetes, rare forms of diabetes, but I won't go into them in any great detail. We'll probably mention one or two as we talk.
So you mentioned a word there that's very important, because some of the questions people ask, especially when they're diagnosed with diabetes, is why did this happen to me? You know, or how come I'm diabetic and my brother or my sister, they don't have diabetes? So what are some of the risk factors for persons developing diabetes?
Okay, so first of all, diabetes, diabetes is very apparent, therefore, you may have type 1 child develops as well. So it can be in your genes. Okay, as you get older, you develop more insulin resistance, so you become more likely to get pre-diabetes or diabetes as you become advanced in age. If you're overweight or you have much extra fat, especially the kind of fat that sits in the center of the body in the abdominal area, you tend to be more prone to get the insulin not working properly or the insulin resistance, and more prone to that. Likewise, people don't actually maybe realize, or a lot of people don't realize, hypertension and high cholesterol and diabetes are very, very closely related in some of the underlying what we call mechanisms, the ways in which they happen in the body. So if you have hypertension or cholesterol problems, you're also more likely to become diabetic. And then, of course, physical inactivity. And I mean, a big driver for diabetes nowadays is obviously just our lifestyles, the way that we eat. We consume a lot of saturated fats. We consume a lot of sugars. And the reality is that when we consume these things, our body can't actually use all of it at the same time. And what it cannot use, it changes into fat that's then put down in our liver, in our pancreas, and in our cells. More insulin from working properly, putting that genetic predisposition almost on fast forward. And you know, sometimes we're seeing people getting diabetes at much younger ages that we may not expect, the type 2 in particular. So those are kind of some of the common things. Another one I'm going to throw out there that some people don't recognize is that alcohol in excess is toxic to the pancreas. So sometimes you may see alcoholics who have so much damage to the organ that produces insulin, that's the pancreas, it's located in the abdomen, in the back of the abdomen, but down the road they become diabetic because the alcohol has actually destroyed their pancreas. Okay, so those are kind of some of the really kind of, you know, common things that we should be aware of, I would say. But there are other things such as certain medications, steroids, and just some other kind of chemicals in the environment. And with type 1 diabetes, type 1 is interesting because, yes, there's a genetic predisposition, you know, but sometimes you may see that it can follow or happen after viral illness. In some cases, it's what's called idiopathic, meaning that people do not have diabetes, especially type 2 diabetes. If you think about our percentage in our population, our studies, depending on which study you look at, are showing our percentages. You know, over 15% or 18.5%. So it means, in reality, most people are probably going to have diabetes somewhere in their family. That's nearly one out of five people who have diabetes. You know, so the first is a population, there's a huge kind of risk, you know, that's going on. So that's why it's been very important to keep repeating the very, very simple messages about what diabetes is, how it happens, you know, how can you possibly stop yourself from getting it? And you did mention one other thing, and that's that I have a touch of sugar. Now, remember that this is all, it's all a process, you know? And so what people call a touch of sugar, from my perspective, it's really just early diabetes, okay? So even some people have pre-diabetes, we now know through a lot of the studies that those touches of sugar actually start causing damage to the nerves and other parts of the body. And it's actually important to really take on that touch of sugar. So that touch of sugar doesn't mean, oh, I'll watch it. Maybe I'll sneak a soft drink or two in here, and maybe I'll go back to the doctor in a year or 2 years and see where I am. You know, you have to actually be very active about it when you have that diagnosis of pre-diabetes. And even when you notice maybe that you're just actually starting to put on extra weight that maybe you didn't have on before. You know, so in Barbados, we really have to be very, what I call, proactive. It means getting in there early and doing things early. and not waiting until you have complications from diabetes to try and do something about it. Because as you know, Dr. Boyce, when you try to do something about complications, you've actually missed the bus. It's way too late. Usually you cannot do very much with any complications. You know, it's like you have it. It was like you trying to prevent yourself from getting pregnant, but you're already pregnant. You have it. It's not going anywhere. It's like your little buddy that's going to just travel with you. Right? So I hope I haven't said too much in a mouthful, but I wanted to just get to that touch of sugar phrase that you used earlier.
And I'm also very glad, Dr. Brathwaite, that you mentioned the alcohol. It's very cultural here in Barbados.
Especially among our men.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we are not going to just say just the men, but we do know that proportionately, there's a disproportionate number of men when you compare to women. But there are some women who can drink the men under the table.
I'm so glad. Yeah. But you know what data is showing nowadays is that historically it was men, but now in, like, say our generation, and middle age, I'm more, I don't like breaking people into categories, but they say more affluent kind of populations, the women are actually very heavy drinkers. And of course you would know that women do not tolerate alcohol as well as men. So it means that we are going to get more damage from our alcohol intake than a man would for an equivalent intake. Whether you think, you know, you're hard and you can drink your man under the table, it doesn't matter in terms of the effect on the body. It has a greater impact on women, but they're seeing it more in women our age now.
Well, that's not very promising. But you know what I've come across, Dr. Brathwaite? What I've come across is that persons generally underestimate the amount of alcohol that they are consuming, and it is near impossible to tell somebody that sitting down and drinking four beers Monday to Friday and then having extra on the weekend is way above the recommended levels for alcohol consumption. People look at me as though I just landed off the moon when I say that four beers at one sitting is, you know, that's a bit much. It is.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of cultural norms, and I mean, you just have to thank God, I think, for education. And I was having this discussion with my father earlier today because he was telling me about what people did, like, you know, in the past, and the fact that they actually just didn't know, you know. But we have so much knowledge now, and so many young people who are so well educated. We pride ourselves on being an educated society. But the point is, it is about how do you use that, apply that education, and apply the education that, you know, my parents and your parents, I mean, the taxpayers of Barbados have paid to educate people, right? So it's like, you know, how do we kind of put that into effect so people can apply it, but not just apply it, I think understand it as well. I always believe it's important to speak in a way that people can understand, because we also always have to understand that people who are not in healthcare may not understand healthcare jargon. And it's important to break things down. But we have a lot of cultural norms we have to figure out, you know, how we kind of address, really.
So for those of you who are just joining us, we are in this evening on the Better Health Radio Show with Dr. Diane Brathwaite. She is the clinical director at the Maria Holder Diabetes Center over there in Warrens. And so far we've discussed what diabetes is, we've discussed the different types, we're looking into the effect of alcohol on the pancreas, one of the major organ players there with diabetes. So now we transition into what would make somebody suspect that they have diabetes. What are the symptoms of diabetes?
Okay, well, the symptoms of diabetes, there are multiple symptoms, and not everybody will experience the same types of symptoms. But some of the common things you may hear people say is they're passing urine more often. They find that they're more thirsty, possibly they're losing weight. They may be eating more food because they're hungry, but they're not putting on weight. Also things like getting like thrush, almost like what the babies get, like the diaper rash, they're getting it in the mouth or even in the genital kind of areas. Some people get itching of the skin or tingling or numbness, you know, in the extremities, etc. So those are some of the common things. Well, what I always say to people is that the most common sign or symptom of diabetes is absolutely nothing. This is why it is so important that diabetes screening should become a part of your regular health care. Because by the time you are having those symptoms, your blood sugar is actually significantly high enough, number one. Number two, it's possible you may even have organ damage by the time you're having symptoms. And number three, you've actually possibly had diabetes for 2 or 3 years. So it's really important that we understand in Barbados that screening is fundamental. If you're saying 1 in 5 people have diabetes, you have to make screening a part of regular kind of health care. And we need to be able to advise people how to screen, when to screen, etc. And, you know, some persons, it's like, if it's in your family, I mean, I have patients who come in and they just go, well, you know, my mother has it. I'm just curious. Like when COVID came, we had tons of people screening for diabetes because everybody wanted to know, let me make sure I'm not diabetic, you know. So our screening rate went up with COVID, right? And it's probably come down to what it was kind of, you know, like before. But I think it's just important to be mindful. Remember, more importantly, I risk factors that we discussed, the family history, the obesity, inactive lifestyle, hypertension, high cholesterol. If you have those things, you need to discuss with your doctor whether you should have a screening, whether you have symptoms or not. And not just if you should have a screening, but you also want to know what should my screening schedule be. Because you can screen for diabetes and say, if I screened for it in 2006 and it was negative, it doesn't mean that I don't have it now, right? Especially if I'm advancing in age. So know when should I come back and check for it again as well. Okay, and that's also really important with women who've had gestational diabetes. If they revert to having normal blood sugars, it's really important that they're on a screening schedule because their risk of becoming diabetic, even after having normal sugars, is actually very high in those.
Okay, so we were having some technical issues there with what you were saying, Dr. Brathwaite. So if you don't mind repeating just what you were saying there in the last part about the screening and risk.
Okay. About screening?
Yes.
Okay, you hearing me okay now?
Okay, I can hear you now.
Wonderful. Okay, I have it right up in my face. Okay, so what I'm saying is the most common sign or symptom of diabetes is absolutely nothing at all. So it's really important that if you have any of the risk factors that we mentioned earlier, that you consider or discuss with your care provider, have a screening for it, whether you have symptoms or not. And not just discuss if you have the screening, but when should your follow-up screening be? So if I had a negative screening in 2007, it does not mean who had gestational diabetes.
Okay, we have a call, so we're going to take that call now, and then we'll get back to discussing what some of the complications are with diabetes, and we'll definitely go over the screening schedule towards the end of the program.
Sure.